You could see, you know, all three faces of Stan, which was a pretty cool feeling after, you know, months of twisting Rubik's Cubes at 3 a.m.
That's Priory High School senior Connor Wright, and he's talking about this project in which he used thousands of Rubik's Cubes to create the face of Stan Musial. I'm Nancy Fowler.
I'm Willis Ryder Arnold, and this is Cut and Paste. That portrait of Stan Musial is actually still up in Ballpark Village. Connor was a really interesting guy, wasn't he, Nancy?
Oh my gosh, and his interests, like, were all over the place, from Rubik's Cubes to later a project with crayons, and he's also into portraiture.
And we'll actually hear a little bit about that from his mother as well. But first, let's go back and find out how he tapped into his creative side.
Well, I started getting interested in art back in junior year. I just started drawing, doing charcoal sketches, that sort of stuff. But I was kind of a perfectionist, and so I was looking for some way to be able to combine my love for math with its exactitude that would, you know, allow me to still have the freedom that art provides. And I discovered pointillism in my art history class.
Wait a minute, that was just last year?
Yeah, so I...
Just for people that might not know, what is pointillism?
Pointillism is essentially a lot of pure dots that when the viewer backs up, those pure dots of pure, like, just colors blend to form an image.
One of the things that's really interesting to me is, like, what captivated you about that specific type of art?
Well, it was actually the way that our art history teacher showed it to us originally. She started out by just showing four dots of pure color on the board, and she asked us to guess what it was, and obviously we had no idea because it just looked like four circles. And then she showed us another image, and it was about, like, maybe 12 circles, and we still had, it just looked like a bunch of, you know, random dots of color. And then finally, when it was zoomed out enough to, it was like maybe 50 dots, and then 100, and then 100,000, we started to be able to see more and more that it was actually a piece that Siro did of pointillism, and we could see the image once it was zoomed out enough, and we couldn't see any of the dots that we had seen originally. And that was just so, so interesting and unique, and I'd never seen anything like that in my life.
Did you instantly think about, like, your interest in math and perfectionism at that point, or was it kind of like more of a development?
It was definitely more of a development, because I was obviously interested in art, but seeing that, I didn't really understand the process at that point. I just knew that I loved the finished product, but I still just kind of assumed it would be the same situation where I would do it and wish I could have done it differently or changed different things. But it's when I was actually playing with a Rubik's Cube in my room. I had one that I got when I was in sixth grade, and for the first time in 5 years, I picked it up off my shelf and was playing with it, and I realized it looked like those, you know, those four dots that she had shown that then turned to nine dots to 50 to 100. And I thought that was kind of funny, and I was like, well, what if you just had a lot of these Rubik's Cubes and the whole image was just made out of these colors? And that's when it kind of turned into something bigger than itself.
So you said a lot. How many, and what did you do with them?
Well, so originally I thought, well, maybe if I had 10 Rubik's Cubes, I could make a smiley face by making them all blue except for just a few yellow dots. And I thought that'd be really cool. And then I thought you could make words out of them or something. And then the further and further I took it, the more and more interested I got into pointillism. So I started Skyping artists across the world, really. I Skyped an artist in Germany and New York and London, and I was able to study this art of pointillism and learn the computer side of it. And that's when I knew that I wanted to attempt a large-scale piece of art, and I was going to do it for my senior thesis at St. Louis Priory School.
Okay, and so what did that end up being?
So it ended up being a 5,980 Rubik's Cube.
5,980.
Yes, 5,980 Rubik's Cubes, and I made a mural of Stan Musial.
And where is that now?
That is in Ballpark Village, right across the street from Busch Stadium.
So where did you assemble this?
In my dining room, actually. My mom was willing enough to move out the dining room table and a couple couches to make room because it is 204 square feet. So we cleared out about half of our first floor to allow me to do this project.
I'm trying to picture, first of all, you had to get all the Rubik's Cubes to a particular face.
So I was thinking when I was going into this is I knew how to solve a Rubik's Cube. So I thought that was the, you know, that's all I would need to do for each cube is if I knew how to at least solve one, then anything less than that would be easier. So I went ahead with the project and bought all the cubes and got them all shipped there. And then that's when I realized that it was not going to be like that because every cube came solved and I'd have to unsolve all 5,980 Rubik's Cubes to a certain point to have the specific pattern on one of the sides. Some would take me 5 to 10 seconds, but some would take, you know, 6 or 7 minutes of trying to figure out how to get this pattern. And
I'm also trying to picture you being able to see the literally the big picture. Did you like bring a ladder into the dining room and look down on it, or what?
Yeah, so I did.
Really?
Yeah, I brought a ladder into the dining room, but you could actually see it even up close, which was really cool. You have to get really, really close for it to just turn into a bunch of dots. But yeah, my dining room, when you step back into the family room, you could see, you know, all three faces of Stan, which was a pretty cool feeling after, you know, months of twisting Rubik's Cubes at 3 a.m.
So, Margaret, what sold you on letting your son rearrange the living room?
Oh, well, a couple of things. First of all, I have to laugh that Connor says that he hasn't been creative until a year or so ago. Since he was a baby, he has been creating and building massive grand projects within our house. So this was nothing new to me. But what convinced me to clear out the dining room, years ago, I listened to and read the book The Last Lecture by Randy Pausch, and I was very influenced by that. He was an Imagineer for Disney. And his mother allowed him to pretty much paint his room however he liked and just do whatever he was passionate about. So when Connor was passionate about this, you know, there was no question.
When did that project begin?
Not this past summer, but the summer before that.
I understand that you found a way to pay for all this.
I had reached out to Bill DeWitt III. Bill DeWitt III is the president of the Cardinals. And so I reached out to him via email, and I remember after, you know, probably a day or so, I was like, Mom, Bill DeWitt hasn't responded to my email yet. And I remember her saying, you know, wow, okay, well, I mean, he is Bill DeWitt. You know, you don't exactly expect a response every time you email the president of the Cardinals. But sure enough, later that night, I saw in my inbox that he had responded, and he loved the idea of the project, but said he sadly could not possibly promise that much of any wall in all of Ballpark Village or Busch Stadium 6 months, 8 months in advance because it's such a huge company. But I told him that if he would just give me a 10-minute phone call, that I promised him he'd be convinced. And so, sure enough, he agreed and called me the next day. And by the end of the phone call, he said that he was and that he invited me to Busch Stadium the next day to give me a tour and show me possible places for the mural. And he said, though, that, you know, if I was really passionate about this project, that I would therefore be able to come up with the funds. And it was going to be over $20,000 to pay for all the Rubik's Cubes. My family couldn't pay for the Rubik's Cubes, and I was asking my parents if any of their friends would want to, and it was obviously a very significant amount of money. So what I did is for $500, a person would get a hand-drawn portrait by myself, and they would also get their name on the plaque that's going next to the mural in Ballpark Village. And within about 3 or 4 days, I had about $22,000 raised.
So you are in school. I understand you have a 4.5 average.
Yes.
You're making this image of Stan Musial with Rubik's Cubes. You're drawing portraits. What are you, not sleeping?
How
are
you? High school's not for sleep. I can do that later.
Literally, where do you fit all this in?
I've definitely been busy this past year, but it's been all worth it.
It seems to be part of your creative process is really making sure that you're reaching out to other people and involving them in what you're doing. Why do you think that that's important, and how does that affect your creative process?
Things can look great, and they can be really cool to go and visit and take pictures of, but that can be extremely superficial. And when there's an entire story that goes behind a project with an entire community that, you know, had a hand in it, that's when it really becomes something that gets remembered.
So your most recent project has to do with crayons. Could you talk a little bit what that is and what it looks like?
So right after the Rubik's Cube mural unveiled, I got an email from Beth Hasick, who's the art coordinator at the Magic House. And she said that they would love a Rubik's Cube mural. And I told her that that sounded great, and I understood, you know, they turned out really cool and that sort of stuff. But I told her that because I'd already done one, I really wanted to try something new, and I wanted to try a different medium. And so I presented the concept of crayons to the board, and I showed them how it would be done, and I built a prototype, and they agreed. And they gave me an enormous wall in the Magic House, which I was super excited about. So it's 32 feet by 10 feet.
Wow.
And it was really big, which was great, but that also meant because you can fit 46 crayons on one surface of one Rubik's Cube, we were going to have a lot more than just, you know, 5,000 or 6,000 of the object. And so after doing the math, it was going to take about 305,000 crayons to fill the wall.
Did they purchase the crayons?
Yes, they purchased the crayons. We got a great deal from Crayola, but you know, it still adds up quickly. It was about $16,000 to purchase all the crayons, and the design. I designed it to be composed of 77 different Crayola colors.
Wow. And how were other people involved in this?
Because there were so many of the object and because it was so tedious and would take so much labor, it would take me about 5 or 6 years working about 5 to 8 hours a day just to lay every crayon by myself. I really want to go into politics someday, and I really want to study social policy and education and that sort of thing. So I really wanted to somehow tie my passions together for education and also for art and that sort of stuff. So what we talked about was having, you know, grade schools, middle schoolers, and high schoolers across St. Louis being able to help out with this mural. And given – so the design took me about 2 months, and then the timeline, it was going to be unveiling around spring break time. So we decided to reach out to 60 different schools across St. Louis and give them a section of the mural to do, and also every crayon they would need. And we gave them instructions and all that sort of stuff. And then they sent them all back to the Magic House, and we installed it on the wall.
You're talking about working with crayons, and you previously worked with Rubik's Cubes. What attracts you to these kind of like disparate mediums?
Well, so what I think is so cool about these sort of mediums is, one, my passion for pointillism and how cool it is that you can know exactly what it's going to look like before a single crayon is even on the wall. I just love how exact you can be and how perfect you can make something. I think people can really relate to things more because not many people can look at a painting and understand the process exactly and understand the brush strokes that go into it and all the different, you know, mechanisms that a painter uses. But when somebody sees this up close, it's literally as simple as just placing one crayon right here. And so when somebody can understand the most simple step behind this project and then see what it turns into, I think it for, you know, for children that visit the Magic House, it can be, you know, a source of inspiration. It can show them that something can be created doing something as simple as placing a crayon in the right spot.
That was Connor Wright discussing his most recent project involving pointillism, crayons, and the Magic House.
And this is Cut and Paste, produced by Willis Ryder Arnold
and Nancy Fowler.
The music you heard throughout was by local musician Eric Hall.
You can find Cut and Paste at stlpublicradio.org or wherever you get your podcasts.